Perek Aleph, Nachum, Perek Aleph. We are in the middle of doing the last Reb Sukkim Pasuk Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, and Yud Dalet. We've gone through, only thing we've gone through is the Mitzudai, so we haven't gotten very far. Now let's do the Rashis. Rashis, so let's start with Pasuk Yud Beis on page 546. Let me read the Pasuk again. Koyim HaShem, 546 to 548. Koyim HaShem, the whole Pasuk again. Im shleimim v'chin rabim, even if the nation of Asher is shalem, and they are many, meaning that they are very great. Rabim over here means they're very great, they have everything they could possibly need, doesn't make a difference. V'chin, nevertheless, nagoizu, they will be cut down. V'ovor, and they will pass away from this world. We use that term, a person, he passes away. And here, where does that come from? Where does that term come from, to pass, to when a person leaves this world? It's very, very fascinating. Study all languages and find and produce, put on a piece of paper all the words that are used by societies, civilizations, religions, countries to define death. In Hebrew, we very commonly say niftar. And in English, we say died, dead. Died on the radio, they say so and so dead at the age deceased. Okay, deceased, died, dead. In Hebrew, we say niftar. Niftar, a pager. A pager, what is a pager? Is that a Yiddish word or a Hebrew word? Pager means in Hebrew. In English, a pegar means a corpse. It's a corpse.
By Yiddish,
because
they were used for that Jew, they would say gestorben.
Gestorben.
And
yes.
Or not that you
get pagan. So what does it mean, gestorben? Gestorben.
Die.
Okay, but what it has a different connotation. Okay, the point I'm trying to make over here is in every language, in every culture, in every religion, it speaks volumes. Life, in a religious person, it's all about the end. What's the purpose? There's a purpose in this world, and we're here in this world for a purpose. The way a society, a civilization, a culture, or a nation defines death speaks volumes on how they value life. And in Hebrew, I mean, amongst us, the way we describe death to some degree is niftar. Niftar appears to be a Aramaic word. I'm mistaken, maybe I'm wrong, it means to be exempt. Potter. Niftar comes from the word potur. Potter in the Gemara means you're exempt, you did something. You're exempt, you don't have to do.
You left.
Is that what it means? That's ovar. That means... A person, the word niftar means you're potter. Potter, what does it mean? Exactly, not required. So what does that connote? That a person in this world has obligations. Mitzuve v'oise. Come to this world, a person has 613 mitzvahs. When he leaves this world, he's exempt from his obligations. The 613 mitzvahs no longer apply to him. He is potur. He is exempt from fulfilling these things. That is one way to define that's a very we're not going to delve into this. Okay, it's a very interesting concept. In every religion, in every culture, there's a term, and the term speaks volumes of what is life. Now that life is over, what has happened? One of the things that we say very commonly in English, and it's not really an English expression, it's something which we've translated, is a person passed away.
He passed on, or passed away.
Passed. He passed. Very common by the goyim. He passed.
Right.
The goyim, they say, it's very, very common in America. He passed. You don't hear that so much among from Jews, but when you talk to a non-Jew and they tell you about someone who died and they're refined, a refined, if there could be such a thing, a refined Gentile. In his conversation, also, he will say the word he passed.
Also, religious means
correct. No, also use the word he expired.
Okay, so these are translations. These words, I don't believe these words are native to American. America is the land of immigrants, so there's no real proof in anything about America. You can't bring a rye for anything in America. But if you go But there are certain things, okay, that are unique to America. You can't say them totally, but a lot of these terms are translations of words that different religions use back in their native land. And when they say a person, when we say in English a person, we commonly say, it's very common among religious Orthodox Jews to say he passed away. What does that mean? He didn't go, the neshama is in existence. The neshama is 100% there. Nothing changed. The only difference is, until now, he was here. And now he passed, and the neshama has been passed to another world, to the Olam HaEmes, to Olam Haba, whatever, it passed. To say that the person is dead, or he expired, I mean, what does that mean exactly, expired? It almost sounds like a parking meter. Expired. You get a ticket.
Because time's up.
So what does that mean exactly?
What's wrong with saying
I don't know. Everyone in their mind, most people, they say things without thinking. They don't even know what they're saying. It's just a common expression, so you use it and you figure out whatever it means. But in Hebrew, we very often say potter, which has a different connotation. He's exempt from doing the mitzvahs. You say about a goy. A goy, you say this in Yiddish, a gestorben for a Jew. And a peger, and if you say for a guy, a peger normally in Hebrew means a corpse. It means just like a dead dog. Yeah, a dead dog.
Like European language, almost every language has two words for
death.
For to die. In Hungarian, I know, which is honorable, and one would use
negative.
Negative.
Interesting.
And in Russian, too. Would be like this.
Very
but in Russian they have another word.
Yeah.
The process of dying.
Yeah.
A word. The
word that describes the process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Smell, which is not, he's not dead yet.
He's in the process of dying.
A
goises. You have a word of goises. What is a goises in the Hebrew? In Aramaic, a goises. Okay, the reason why I'm saying that is because over here, we have in this pasuk here, the word v'ovar. We're describing a nation. And the nation, as we're trying to describe nations, as given the characteristics of the human being, and we're stating that this nation is going to die. They're going to be cut down. They're going to be killed. They're going to cease to exist. And the term that the pasuk, the Navi selected is v'ovar. It passed away. V'ovar. Now, what is it? And in this context, it doesn't appear to be used the way we use it in English. In English, we say passed away, it's refined. It has a connotation that the neshama is alive just as much now as it was before. The only difference is it passed from the border. It crossed the Canadian border. Has a passport, has a visa, and it crossed the border from one part of this existence to another part, from this world to the next world. In this context, in this pasuk, the word v'ovar appears to mean they cease to exist. They just don't exist, period. Hashem will cut them down, v'ovar, and they ovar literally means to pass. Where are they passing to? To nowhere. They're not passing to Olam Haba. Are they even passing to Gehenim? Gehenim is too good. It's too good for these wicked people. Gehenim is rehabilitation. We always discuss that. Gehenim is not a bad thing. A person to be zoiche to Gehenim is a good thing. Because Chazal tells us not every neshama merits to go to Gehenim. Because when a person comes out of Gehenim, Gehenim is a limit. There's a limit. No one stays in Gehenim forever. Only 12 months. And there is refinement. And after the term is over, the neshama comes out better and repaired, rectified than before. Not every neshama is deserving of rehabilitation. And not every neshama can be rehabilitated. It's very exclusive. You need a lot of pull to get into Gehenna. It's like brisk. You need a lot of money and a lot of pull to get into Gehenim. So when it says v'ovar, in this connotation, it's almost as if it's saying, these people, they're going to pass from existence. They're not going to Gehenim. They're not going to the next world, Olam Haba. They're passing They're just passing from this world into nowhere. Into nowhere. It's a very negative, extremely negative connotation the way the word pass is used in this pasuk, in contrast to the way the word pass is used in society today in America, which in fact it appears to be from the more refined expressions to describe death. I always find it very, very jarring. I don't listen too much to the radio anymore. I used to listen religiously to 1010 Winds. And they, every day they wake up, they talk about an actor or a famous person. They say his name and they say dead at 88, dead at 72, dead. Like they just say it with such a punch, right? And to me, it was always, I find it to be very unrefined. Maybe I'm wrong. I find it, this is like New York. You know, New York is not necessarily known to be from the most refined parts of the world. And you know, it really illustrated, they had imitation on a radio commercial. It really, really was superb. They had a commercial where they imitated police officers, law enforcement from all different parts of the country. They had a fellow, a policeman from California, a policeman from Texas, a policeman from I don't know, all different parts of the country. And then they had a policeman from New York. NYPD, what do they call the finest? Who's the four of the finest? New York's finest. Yeah. New York's brave. Who's the bravest? The fire department? The fire department. The sanitation, what are they?
Cleanest.
Yeah? No, they're not. They have a term for everyone. The New York's finest. And it was just so hilarious how in this commercial they imitated in contrast to the law enforcement officers of other cities. The New York, the police department was presented as kind of a good, very unrefined, very, very gruff, coarse, very
curt,
like whatever. All these like very like ugh. It was a very very it was hilarious because it was just really true.
But New York is in general like
exactly,
it's
exactly.
Such a fast-moving community.
Exactly, all right. That's what. Right, that you don't have time. We don't have time for this. We don't have time for niceties. Let's get on with business. We don't have time for this. You're out of town. It's slow motion. Oh,
reverse.
How you doing? What's new? Before the police officer gives you a ticket, before he gives you a ticket, he wants to know where you bought your car. What's the family? Who are you related to?
My daughter goes crazy because it's just 30 miles an hour. They go 30 miles an hour. They don't go 35, and she's behind them. And she's pulling. She's used to 30 miles an hour. She's going 35 or 40. You know.
Only 40? What? 30? A 30 means that's the minimum.
This is the way you're going down the streets, and people are only going whatever the speed limit is. You're not used to it. It's a cultural thing.
In New York, whatever the number it says on the sign is the minimum. The Chol HaMarbe L'Saper HaRezeh M'Shubach. Okay, everyone knows out of town. Everyone's it's an unwritten rule. When you go out, when a person lives out of town, if they see in front of them on the road a New York license plate, get out of the way. Stay far away from a car that has a New York license plate, because that means the driver is a nutcase and is unpredictable. He will not turn on his signals. He'll make short stops. He'll cut you off. Stay far away from a New York license plate.
TC plates
are
very. You have to be careful.
I went.
Yes, absolutely.
I went to Boston and I came to to cross the street. So I in New York I wouldn't dare, and I saw a car coming, so I wouldn't dare step into the street. I wasn't ready to go al Kiddush Hashem, so I wouldn't step into the street. I would, and all of a sudden the car, it slows down and stops and says, "No, you go. You have the right of way." You have what? Yeah. I have the right of way? What? If this was Brooklyn and I came to a street corner and if I would step into the street, I'd be dead. I know what the halach, I know what they taught me on my driver's exam, okay? No. That the pedestrian has the right of way in front of a stop sign. I know that. But whoever follows the rules in New York.
No, what happens more more and more now.
That's exactly how it is where I come from.
It's more and more now that they're stopping because they're getting tickets.
Florida's worse because they're all transplanted New Yorkers when they're 90 years old.
They used to play shuffleboard.
There's a cop that goes to the line.
It wasn't
if someone's in the crosswalk, even if he's on the other side,
get a ticket.
They give you a ticket.
Okay, you got they're trying to shape up. In any event, the word v'ovar is a very nasty word in this context. It's interesting that in today's society, the word v'ovar, to say that a person passed, is viewed, at least in my understanding, as a refined way to speak to another person. It's like non-denominational. You know, you don't want to get. You're not always in life looking for a fight. Sometimes you come into a room. Listen, I'm not here to talk about Trump. You're right. You're walking. I'm not here to talk about politics. You go to the dentist. You go to the bank. You go somewhere, and you say, I don't want to talk politics. Let's just do what we're here to do. Likewise, I don't want to talk religion. I have to take care of something here. Let's not talk religion. And if we discuss death, inevitably, death is the ultimate starting point of religion. In today's society, if you don't want to talk about death and you want to just say in the most non-denominational expression that a person is no longer living with no connotations, you say he passed. He passed. It's very refined.
Delayed.
But isn't Ovar also past? P-A-S-T, Ovar, Hover, Vayiya. You can say this is, you're talking about
yes.
They were in the past.
Well, that's really what passing means. When a person passes, it means...
But maybe it's referring to the history, the past history, and then it goes...
That's an idea.
To the end of the pasuk, it says, Lo anech o. That means it doesn't go to the future.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. Ovar, Hover... Their history. Their history. It's ancient history. They're gone. It's they are a thing of the past with a P-A-S-T, not P-A-S-S. I'm trying to tell you the word Ovar means P-A-S-S. You're suggesting Ovar means P-A-S-T, past, in the past tense. Yes, that's a very nice idea. Okay, it's something to think about. Let's go further. Let's V'inisich. The pasuk concludes, I'm going to torture you, loy anecho. This is a theme which appears many times, that Hashem loy shanisi. We mentioned this many times, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we discussed already, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he destroys our enemies, he waits until their sin is filled to the very, very top. He punishes them in one shot, and there's nothing left of them. Unlike Klal Yisrael, Hashem punishes us piecemeal, little by little, so that we should be able to deal with suffering, and we can rise once again. Now let's see the Rashi. Rashi pasuk yud beis im shleimim v'chim bravim yofet targum shel yoinasan miyushuv aloshna nikre. Rashi very rarely says the word yofet. Rashi says the word yofet twice in Parashat Korach. So very go to get a computer, do a search in Rashi. Rashi is second to none in his choice of words, his precision. His use of the Hebrew language is literally second to none. And when Rashi says a word, you pay attention. The word Yofa is not a common word in Rashi's vocabulary. In Parshas Korach, he writes, Yofa Parsha Zo Nidreshes. This Parsha is expounded in a beautiful way in the Medrash. And then Rashi, in fact, he uses the word Yofa again in the Parsha second time. Rashi Kaman never says with Yofa anywhere in his entire commentary in the entire Chamishei Chumshei Torah. And here was Zeicher today to have Rashi, the same Rashi, he's used the word Yofa. Yofa Targum Shel Yonason Miyoshev Al Lashon HaMikra. He's giving Yonason Ben Uziel the highest compliment in the world. For Rashi to give you a compliment, that's pretty good. Rashi, by the way, he almost never insults anyone. Rashi is very delicate. Rashi is very good. Why was Rashi zoiche to be from the Rabban Shel Yisrael? Rashi means Rabbeinu Shloimo Yitzchoki, Reish Shin Yud. But Klal Yisrael have taken Rashi and they've created their own acronym to give him honor, Reish Shin Yud, Rabban, their teacher, Shel, of Yisrael. Okay, that's a make-believe acronym, but it's very beautiful. It's what Klal Yisrael has given honor. Why does Klal Yisrael love Rashi so much? Because Rashi never insults anyone. Rashi is very delicate. Rashi is very polite. He has a lot of derech eretz. You never find anywhere in Rashi will go to take the... He always quotes other mepharshim, and he writes, I don't agree, ein mi yoshev al hamikra, but he's always very polite in his disagreement. Chazal said, why don't we pass like Beis Hillel, and we don't pass like Beis Shammai? Why? Why was Beis Shammai, his piskei halacha not accepted? Because Hillel was noichin zela zebalacha, midois toives. There's something to be said about character in learning. There's milchamta shel Torah, there is battle, and all is fair in love and war, okay? But there's also an element in the milchamta shel Torah, there is an element of refinement, of midas. It's not for nothing we say every single day in davening that the malachei hashareis v'noisnim rishus zeh ruach. They give rishus. They don't go chap the cover for themselves. Okay, there are a lot of examples in society of people who want to serve Hashem, and they want the cover all for themselves, and there's a lack of derech eretz. The malachei hasharetz are also competing to give Hashem honor. Kadosh, 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 baruch kivoid. But it says in Nusach HaTzvila, V'noisnim rishus ze lo ze lahakdish l'osham v'nachas ruach. When you see... Right. They give rishus ze lo ze. But V'noisnim rishus. But it says, V'noisnim rishus ze lo ze lahakdish l'yotzram. To sanctify their creator, benachas ruach, the safa v'ruro v'nima kedusha kulam ke'echad oinim v'yemrim b'yira kadosh kadosh kadosh. So if the malachei hashareis, each one wants to give honor to Hashem, the first thing is derech eretz kadmo l'Torah, rishus netilas rishus. How much more so do us mortals have an obligation? When you want to sanctify Hashem's name, how do you sanctify Hashem's name? You say Pshat on the Pasuk. Rashi, Pshat, what Pshat on the Pasuk? If the whole technique of saying your Pshat is by spitting, by ripping apart, being nasty to someone else, that is not a derech of Hatzlacha. Now you'll ask me, what about the Ravid? And we discussed with someone, Rabbi Schmidman, he explained this to me. What about the Ravid? Omar Avraham. Every Ravid takes the Rambam and says about the Rambam words that even in this generation where unfortunately we've sunk to such a low, even that would not be tolerated today what the Ravid says about the Rambam. So how did the Ravid says that the Rambam doesn't have a brain in his head. He writes, that's a very light. Go search, show interest, just put a little kuntras. A kuntras, I guarantee you, it will be a bestseller. A bestseller. I should do it. Make some parnasa. A bestseller. Take all of the nasty expressions that the Ravid on every page of the Rambam, in the regular Rambams, there's the Ravid on the bottom. He begins with an aleph, aleph. Someone said to me, he was trying to test me, what does aleph, aleph stand for in the Ravid? So I didn't know. I didn't know. I don't know what it stands for. So he says, he's making litzanis, and you go to yeshiva, and you don't know, and you learn Rambam and the Ravid, and you don't even know what the Aleph Aleph stands for. Every Ravid begins with an Aleph Aleph. It stands for Omar Avraham. The Ravid's name was Avraham, Omar Avraham. So I didn't know. So he kept on insulting me more and more. So I said to him, you know what it stands for? Oror Ata. Did not go off well, I can tell you that. In any event, Omar Avraham, how come the Ravid went? I never really understood how could the Ravid, I thought the Ravid was just a hot-tempered person. Right. Look, Shammai, So the answer is, Rav Shimon explained to me that the Ravid, when he wrote, the Ravid was about in his 90s. So I'm not in his 90s, he was the Gadol Hadar, the undisputed Gadol Hadar. The Rambam was a Yingle, was a 30-year-old, a little kid on the block. And the Ravid, every day they have in the newspaper, Kaviyachol, like a column in the newspaper. The Rambam says this: this 30-year-old kid, like you have an 18-year-old kid, is writing in the newspaper. He's writing a chiddush lahalacha, his own chidushim. And the Ravid, who is the undisputed Gadol Hadar, he opens up the newspaper and he sees a kid, a child, is writing in the newspaper a chiddush lahalacha, that we don't that no one ever did this before. The Ravid was the Gadol Hadar, and the halacha, he was always the poisek. And his decision and his psak halacha was A. And he opens up the newspaper and he sees, now it wasn't a pechisas kovod, it was probably from a different city, different whatever it was. And he sees that this kid is writing something that in the Ravid's mind is totally wrong. So he says, this yingle here, this little kid over here, a chutzpah to write in the newspaper, a chiddush, which makes absolutely no sense. He has no brain in his head. Okay, there's a very big difference when you're 90 years old and you're criticizing someone who's 18 years old versus...
Yeah. Did not include negative statements.
Not to the degree of the Ravid, of the way the Ravid, wrote about the Rambam. Before the Ravid, doesn't seem so.
When he was younger, the Ravid.
When the Ravid was younger? But what all this, the perish of the Ravid is directed against the Rambam. Basically, there's kimat nothing that the Rambam says that the Ravid. If the Rambam says this, automatically I have to disagree, because this person is so thoroughly corrupt.
Does this affect his legacy, though?
Who, the Ravid?
Yes, over the years.
It increases legacy.
It increased
because if not for the Rambam, we probably today would not even know there was a person called the Ravid. It's because since
how
did they live in comparison? I don't know anything about it.
The age gap was massive. There was probably at least a 50, 60 year age gap between them.
They were contemporaries of each other.
Yeah, they were. They were contemporaries, but he was much older.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously after the preacher, obviously it was l'shem shemayim. Because Chazal say, "Kol machloike shehi, l'shem shemayim, soifoy lehiskayim." Now, there's a lot of jokes about that. My Chazal, okay, I'm not going to tell you the jokes, but you see here such a thing. You see here that the Melchamta Shel Torah, the war between the Rambam and the Ravid, is very much alive today. Today, every yeshiva student, you learn the Rambam, you learn the Ravid. You won't get perspective. In order to appreciate a Rambam, it's not possible to appreciate the words of the Rambam without the Ravid. Because the Ravid gives the Rambam perspective. The Rambam just makes a statement. So what's the big deal? When you see how the Ravid disagrees, now you can first begin to appreciate the brilliance of the Rambam, where he's coming to say differently. And that brings out... This obviously had to have been l'shem shemayim, because it cannot possibly be that the hashkach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that in about 800 years, they're very much alive today, unless it was l'shem shemayim. That's our emunah. If you have a machlek, is that shaloi l'shem shemayim, they ultimately, they fade away into the sunset. They're gone. Hashem is not tolerant of machlek, is that shaloi l'shem shemayim. Fades away.
See some of that in Maharal also, when he has strong disagreements with certain...
And he has sharp words?
Yeah.
Sharp, okay, they get all worked up. The Rashi, Kimat, I don't think you ever came across a Rashi. Do you ever remember learning a Rashi anywhere in Shas, anywhere in Chumash? Everything we ever yield a Rashi, that Rashi is nasty? Never recall such a thing. Rashi to say a nasty word about someone else. Rashi, very often, he quotes, this is what I heard. And then my Rebbe taught me this.
Just the opposite. You see, by Noach, when he says, Yesh, Shimon, Gnai,
that he puts them around by not saying Yeshua.
Right, the way he describes L'shevach is more beautiful, his language is more complimentary on those that say L'shevach. So Rashi here, and Rashi goes so far to give you a compliment. Wow. That's really, no, that's like off, over the top. Here Rashi says, Yofet Targum Shal Yonasan B'yushev al-Lashon HaMikra. The beauty, of the Targum Yonasan is his interpretation fits very much into the Pasuk. What does he say? Im Yehoine Shalmin Be'etza. Sheyukulam Shavin Be'haskama Be'haskama Achas. This is really what we learn in the parish of the Mitzvah, the stuff, the same exact thing. And the word Shleimim, what does it mean, Shleimim? Shleimim means complete. It can be complete in many different respects. They have an army. Every single soldier is present. None of the soldiers are missing. Shleimim means they have money, resources, none of the above. Shalem be'etza. They all are in agreement as to the plan, the battle plan, how to proceed to survive the war, to survive the war against Nebuchadnezzar. We're describing it, Nebuchadnezzar is coming here to attack and destroy the nation of Ashur. Nation of Ashur needs a defense. They need a battle plan. And if there's achdus amongst the people as to how they're going to go about defending themselves, that will be very powerful because everyone's on the same page. Nevertheless, you'll still be destroyed. So the chiddush of the Targum, and as Rashi elaborates, is their sholem in eitzah, in counsel, in planning, in ideas of how to go about surviving. Im yehoin, if the nation of Asher will be shleimin be'etzah, meaning sheyihiyu kulam shavim behaskama achas, they will be in agreement to one plan. Doesn't matter. You'll still be destroyed.
They couldn't forgive them. Shleimim.
Shleimim
is much that they are good.
Eitzah. So what Kamen is saying is the alternative would be Shleim means that they're good people. Yeah, we in Hebrew like to say, you say about a shidduch, a bacher. You ask about what kind of boy you see. And if the Rashi tells you, he's a Shalem. He's a Shalem. That's like, you know, you have a bulkala, the dafyomi. Yeah, dafyomi. Yesterday, 2 days ago, you have a choice on Shabbos. Can you make the hamotzi on a massively large challah, but it's cut at the end, versus a teeny little bulkala? What's the halacha? A shalem, a shlema. Something that's complete, that's choshev. Something that is cut, even if it's big, that's not choshev. So we would be inclined to translate shlemim means, these people, they're shlemim. They get an A+ for their shidduch resume. So Rashi says, no, that's not the pshat. Targum says, not. They're rishoyim. They get an F. Don't be meshadich with them. They get an F- for their midois, for their hanhogois. What then does it mean, shleimim? It means they're unified in their plan, to defend themselves, in their battle strategy to survive.
One mind.
It doesn't matter. Hashem is the ultimate authority, the ultimate power, and He will destroy them because of their wicked ways. Next part of the pasuk. What does it mean, rabim? Rabim ma'od anshei Nineveh oyevach oyevayich yushlaim. They're going to be many people. Now notice, I think this is not like the Mitzudas. The Mitzudas, he translated the word Rabim to mean great, not numerous. Go back to the, if I'm not mistaken, let me go back to the Mitzudas. No, you're saying I made a mistake. It's the same thing, same exact thing. I thought for some reason the men Rabim, they're a Rav. They're very mighty. They have very powerful weapons. That's not what it says. It says Rabim in number. If they are numerous people, it does not matter. The V'chein, next words of Rashi, and who are these people? Rashi is clear as day. We are describing the people of Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of the nation of Ashur. And who are they? They are your enemies. Make no mistake, they are not your friends. They're not your friends. Oyevayich Yerushalayim. We're coming to bring contrast between Nineveh versus Yerushalayim. Just like we have Tsar and Yerushalayim. Someone tells you that Tyre and Yerushalayim, they coexist, is a liar. Impossible. Kish Zekom, Zenoifel. They cannot possibly coexist. Here, it doesn't say that about Nineveh, but it does say that Nineveh had a special hatred towards Yerushalayim, obviously, what Yerushalayim represented. Yerushalayim represents serving Hashem. In Nineveh, they rebelled against Hashem, and therefore they're considered to be our enemy. And in fact, Asher, he exiled the Aseres HaShvatim, and therefore they're called our enemy. V'chein, next word of Rashi, this we said before, Af im gozu eschidekel v'avru esperosto. Here we have over here a new translation. Not like the Mitzudai Stavid. We learned the second word v'chein to mean nevertheless. Nevertheless, Hashem, the subject is Hashem. That's the Mitzudai Stavid. Hashem will cut them down. Rashi says different. Af im gozu eschidekel. The subject is Ashur, not Hashem. Even the chain, even if this nation will cross the Chidekel, the river, the Avares Peros, they'll cross the two major rivers to reach Yerushalayim, Tiberus and the Euphrates, Latsur Olecha, to reach Yerushalayim, to lay siege to Yerushalayim, which indeed happened in the time of Chizkiyahu. Lo yatzlichu, they will not be successful. Why not? Shaharei inisich v'loy a'aneich od. I will torture you, the nation of Ashur, to the point where it will not be necessary to destroy you a second time. Period. Now, let's go back to the pasuk. So, im shleimim, even if the people of Ashur, of Nineveh, are one mind to do evil, v'chein rabim, they are numerous, v'chein no goizu, they cross, Nogoizu means to cut. They cut across the Chidekel. The Ovor, they pass through the Euphrates, Peros. Two words, which according to the Rashi mean the same thing, to cut through, to pass through. One is Gzuntait, one is being used in reference to Chidekel, the other is being used in reference to Peros. It doesn't matter. Hashem says, Klal Yisrael, Yerushalayim, I will save you. I will destroy them, the inisich, I will torture them to the point where it will not be necessary, lo anech od, that it will not be necessary to torture them a second time. And what is that referring to? According to Rashi, has to be the maisa of the siege against Yerushalayim, the miracle that we mentioned on the Lil Pesach, Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. Pesach is only in 55 days, I think. 54 days. Did you check your house for chametz yet? Are you cleaning for Pesach? It's only in 50-something days, Pesach. So we mentioned this, Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. We mentioned that the night of Pesach, Sancheriv came with an army of at least 800,000 soldiers. That's the starting number. To lay siege against Yerushalayim. In fact, he arrived Erev Pesach, and he gave a look, and he saw, what? This is Yerushalayim? This is what they told me is impenetrable? Impossible to conquer? Big deal, you know what? Let's get a good night's sleep. Everyone go to sleep. We'll take care of this tomorrow, 9:00. First, no emergency to conquer this city. It's a piece of cake. That was Lil Pesach. And that night, Vayihi b'chatzi halayla, Klal Yisrael was eating the Korban Pesach, and they were eating their matzah, v'Hashem, it was a repetition, of Vayihi b'chatzi halayla, v'Hashem, hikos kol b'chor b'yaretz Mitzrayim. He was even greater, Hashem wiped out not every b'chor, every living creature. The entire army did not wake up the next morning. All of them were dead, except for a handful, plus a handful, including Sancheriv himself, and some say his grandson or great-grandson or someone that would ultimately be the father of Nebuchadnezzar, he was also there on site, and he also survived for some reason. Hashem allowed him to live to the next day, and they fled, And ultimately, he was killed, and Sanhedrin was killed by his own children. So this is L'chor, what Rashi is referring to, that even if the whole nation of Ashur, they are complete, they have already succeeded in exiling the Aseres HaShvatim. They already succeeded in conquering most of the Malchus of Yehuda. The only thing left to conquer was the city of Yerushalayim. Klal Yishol came that close. It was that close to being wiped out at this time. And it was the last holdout. And here Sanheriv arrived. Al Derech HaTeva, it was impossible for Klal Yishol to survive. Hashem did a miracle. Even if they'll be shlemim, v'chein rabim, they're going to be unified in their council, they're going to be numerous. V'chein ogoyzu, they're going to cut through the chidekel, the ovar, they're going to cut through pros to reach Yerushalayim. It doesn't matter. Hashem does not want you to succeed. V'inisich, I'll wipe you all out in one shot. Loi a'anechot. Chazal said that night, Mashiach should have come. And when Klal Yisrael recognized the miracle, Chizkiyahu, he should have instituted a national holiday in honor of this event where they would say halal with a bracha. That's what it says. And if Chizkiyah would have seized the moment and recognized the nes and have sung shira to Hashem, he would have been the Melech HaMashiach, and Sanherev would have been viewed retroactively as Milchemes Goig Umagoig, and this would have ushered in the days of Mashiach, whatever all that means. What happened? He made a fatal mistake. What was the fatal mistake? He did not sing Shira. He did not institute a holiday in honor of this miracle. And because he did not do so, he was denied being the Melech HaMashiach. It's a Chazal. And Mashiach did not come at that moment in time. Chazal struggle. Why not? What held back Sanherev, Chizkiyahu, from instituting a public holiday to make this into a Yom Tov and to sing Shira? So one of the answers, it's a very popular answer, especially in the yeshiva world, this answer, and they say, let's discuss history. In the history of the world, which tekufa was the greatest time of learning of Torah? Which was the greatest tekufa of Torah? Beyond a shadow of a doubt, Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu says, there's a pasuk that says the only reason why Chazal said that Klal Yisrael merited this miracle of the miraculous death of the soldiers of Sanherev was because Klal Yisrael valued the study of Torah. People would burn the midnight oil. That's where it comes from. The shemen. I don't know the pasuk on the tip of my tongue, but they would burn the midnight oil to learn Torah. It was priority number one. Yeah.
In which era was it that school children?
That was the era.
That was then.
Now he would put a sword on the Batei Midrashim. Batku midon v'ad be'er sheva. Anyone that does not come to Beis Medrash will be pierced by the sword.
No, I was referring to school children.
Badku midon v'ad, yes.
Yeah,
that was it. Badku, after he put the sword on the Beis Medrash, on the outside of the door, and he made a declaration, anyone that does not come to Beis Medrash should be killed. Badku, they investigated, midon v'ad be'er sheva, from one end of Erei Yisrael to the other, v'loy matzu, they could not find the tinek v'tinekes, a little boy and a little girl that was not experts in the most complex matters of halacha, of tumah v'tahara, negon v'olos. They were experts. That was the error. He had an incentive. What was the incentive? Not to get killed. People, you know, talking about in this generation, learning Torah l'shma, no exams. Don't take an exam. Learn Torah l'shma. Is that a proper mahalach in learning? Or maybe it's a good idea to take an exam. Incentives. The greatest generation of Torah was Chizkiyahu. And in the generation of Chizkiyahu, there was not just an incentive, a positive reinforcement, there was a negative reinforcement. If you don't learn, call me Noatz Cheref on the Beis Medrash, He said, anyone that does not come to learn Torah will be pierced by this sword. So you see from that Maamar Chazal that incentives to learn Torah is a very good thing. It's a very good thing. To say that just to learn Torah Lishma with no incentives, without accountability, is not necessarily a very good thing. Problem is, not everyone is holding today where they have the mind and the ability to be accountable to what they learn. And if you're going to put on too much pressure on people, at least in this society, then many people are afraid will drop out totally. So it's a very difficult balance, a tight wire, to give people incentives to learn, but mitzad sheni, not to push away people who can't reach that level of producing. And also, when you give too much of an incentive, it becomes, there's definitely a lack of, the learning is not the same. I know personally, I used to take exams on the Gemara. And you know, I'm telling you, Rabbi Yossi, there was no time in my life that I had more sibuk nefesh in learning than the time I took the exams. But, and I'm trying to go back to it now as well, but I know one thing is for sure, after you take the exams for a period of time, when you learn the Gemara, it's amazing how I find myself in my mind, okay, this is what they're going to ask me on the exam. I know that you take enough exams, you already know the style. You know, and it's interesting, the exam, it limits you. It's interesting, it really does. It limits you. Okay, this is what I need to know, because I know how it works. This is a typical piece of Gemara where there are three opinions, and they want to know the three opinions. I got it, let's go further. If I was not taking the exam, and I had patience, I would probably look at that Gemara very differently. I wouldn't just focus on ABC. He says this, this, this. Let's go further. I would probably, I would look at the Gemara with a different angle. So listen, there's no such thing as a perfect world. You know, Adrabba, Baruch Hashem, there's an exam, so at least I'm learning the Gemara in this fashion. So, you know, people who criticize exams, there's something to the criticism as well. But in any event, Chizkiyahu, he was the generation where the Klal Yisrael were at their top of their game. And Chizkiyahu, it was not Torah Lishma. It was incentives. If you don't learn, you get killed. You're going to be pierced by the sword. That's what it says. Now in his generation, what did Chazal say? Why then was he not Mashiach? So you're not going to believe this. This is a lot of Farshim say this. The reason why he did not institute a holiday, a national holiday, to celebrate the survival of Klal Yisrael against the onslaught of Sancheriv is because Bittul Torah. If he would declare another holiday, there'd be no learning for a whole week. Today, everybody said Purim. Do you know how much Bittul Torah there is because of Purim? Okay? Purim goes on. Purim goes on, it's a whole week, unfortunately. Purim was only meant to be, you do the mitzvahs, you wake up in the morning, today is Purim. So davening is a little longer, someone's going to lay in the Megillah, okay? So lay in the Megillah, it'll take an hour. And then there's the mitzvahs hayoyim. Okay, how long does it take to bring mishloach manos to someone? 5 minutes? Bring it with you to shul and give it to him in shul. And matanos lo evyoinim? No, another 5 minutes. And then today for lunch, we're not going to have cornflakes. For lunch today, we're going to have a meal. We're going to have a su'uda, a real nice su'uda, so it'll take another hour. And after, so how much Bittul Torah was there because of the mitzvah of Purim? Maybe 2 hours of Bittul Torah. Today, what is Purim? Purim is a whole week. You have to go to the store to buy the costume. It doesn't fit. So you have to get another costume, and you have to go and go design, spend hours to come up with a theme for your Mishloach Manos, and then put it together, go to the store and buy everything that doesn't come. It goes on, make the jokes and the plays and the costumes and the whole celebration, run around the whole day. All right, listen, it really is very, very special, and it's very inspiring, and if not for Purim, who knows if we would even learn altogether the whole year round. It is a necessary it is a yirida litzarech aliyah, and it brings an incredible aliyah. However, Chizkiyahu said, I don't want to make another holiday. It's enough. We have enough holiday. The Purim didn't exist at that point in time. Anyway, there's no Purim, there was no Chanukah. But Chizkiyahu said, we have enough holidays. We have Pesach, we have Sukkot, we have Shavuos. Another holiday to commemorate that we survived against Sancheriv. If we're going to make a Purim out of this, then it's going to be a whole week of Bittul Torah. And this...
A mitzvah of Bittul Torah?
It's not. It's not. But who says this? You have to make a new mitzvah? Who, why is it necessary? Chizkiyahu believes, you have to appreciate Chizkiyahu's mindset. Chizkiyahu had an incredible chavivus for the study of Torah like none other. There was no generation in the time of history where the people valued learning Torah. Every second was precious. Not like today. Today, I don't think there are B'nai Torah that do value learning every single second, but the Hamoinam, you don't see in society that the Jewish people, there are 15 million Jewish people. If you want to go talk about how many Orthodox Jews, you don't find that they value every second of learning Torah is so valuable like it was in the time of Chizkiyahu. In his generation, it was bread and butter to learn Torah. If we are going to institute a new holiday, it means it'll be Yeshiva week, exactly. It's going to be a whole week of Bittul Torah. He felt it's not correct. And Chazal criticized him. And they say to him, you were wrong. You were wrong. It was the proper thing to do. Pa'amim shebitula zehu kiyuma. Sometimes not learning is what brings about learning. A yirida litzarech aliyah. Hashem has done for you a miracle. Klal Yisrael was on the verge of extinction. Sancheriv arrived at the front door. They're about to destroy you. Miraculously, Hashem wiped out the whole army, and you're alive to talk about it? It's your duty to be mevatel from Torah, to celebrate, to make this day into a yomtiv, that you should say, Shirois visish bachos, even if it means you'll have to go spend the whole day buying a costume, or going and sitting in the kitchen and buying cookbooks and figuring out delicious recipes. It's worth it. It's kedai. That's life. That's life. Life is not always about learning. Life many times is about when it's proper not to learn, when you have other obligations to Hashem. Chazal say this. They criticize him for this. This was a mistake. And because this was a mistake, that's why he was not zeichet to be the Melech HaMashiach. And this whole event was not viewed in hindsight to be a melchemes goig u magoig. In life, it's about balance. And that's what we struggle with until Yemos HaMashiach is always to find the right balance in every prat. A mitzvah has to be done balance. Not too much, not too little. It's all about Goldilocks. Okay? Not too hot, not too cold, not too soft, not too hard. Life, and throughout history, Klal Yisrael is always struggling to find the sweet spot in Avodas Hashem. This pasuk, according to Rashi, appears to be describing exactly this event. This event, even though the nation is Sholem, and the Rabbim, Nagoizu, they cut through the Chidekel, Ovar, they cut through for us, doesn't matter, Hashem is going to save you. Next, words of Rashi. Now then Rashi quotes another interpretation. And if you oid shamati, I've also heard im shleimim heim ata anshe ninve bigdu losam. According to Rashi's second interpretation, they're shalem in their greatness. V'chein im you oid rabim v'nichbadim yoyser. If they are even greater than great. V'chein nogoizu v'ovar. This is what the Mitzudos David said, V'chein nevertheless, agizeim v'avireim, I will cut them down and cause them to cease to exist. Hareze k'mo v'chasher ya'anu, so kein yirbe. The word over here, V'chein, is being used the same way we use the word kein yirbe in Shemos, Parashat Shemos. V'chasher ya'anu also, the more the Egyptians afflicted and tortured the Jewish people, nevertheless, Cain yirbe. So this is exactly what the Mitzudos David said. Cain in this context means nevertheless. V'inisich loy anech oid, I will torture you once. It will not be necessary for me to return and torture you a second time. I will cut you down. The word necherotza is a very powerful word. It means to destroy, to obliterate. V'loy ezokek. I will not be required. Lich oid. Lich means to you to repeat this. It will not be a requirement for me to repeat this, do this again. Now, let's go one more finish with the Rashi. Rabbi Seinu derashu le'inyin ma'isah tzedaka b'masech tegitin. The Chazal take this pasuk and they have a drasha. It refers to tzedaka, which we'll discuss in a moment. The Likutei Shas tells us what this refers to. Le'ma'isah tzedaka b'masech tegitin. Ach einay al seder sh'ar hanavua. If you're going to make that drasha, it does not fit into the other two pesukim. So let's right away see this Chazal to get an appreciation of what this means. Let's see right away in the bottom pasuk yud beis on Likutei Shas u'midrashei Tanoim koyemar Hashem u'mishlemim v'imchim rabim v'chein ogoizu v'ovar v'inisich le'anichoit dorash Rebbe Avira zimnin. Sometimes this is not his own chiddush. Sometimes he said this in the name of Mishmei Drav Ami, V'zinim Omar Lo Mishmei Drav Asi. He said over halacha, Ha'oimer Davar B'Shem Amroi Mevi Ge'ulo Li'olam. Who taught him this halacha? He had two Rebbeim that taught him the same halacha. Two Rebbeim. They both taught him exactly the same thing, and he wanted to give them credit. Sometimes he said halacha in the name of one Rebbe, and sometimes he said halacha in the name of the other Rebbe. Why couldn't he just say both of them? Interesting, why not both of them? Okay, I don't know. That's another topic of discussion. My dechsev, koyemar Hashem, im shleimim v'chin rabim v'chin nagoizu v'avar. What does this mean? So the Gemara makes a drasha. Im roye adam shem zaynoisav mitzum tzamin. If a person sees that he's struggling to make a living, yaseh mehen tzedakah, then give more tzedakah. Okay, this is counterintuitive. You barely have enough money to survive. I don't have money to give a donation. You get a letter in the mail. Someone is being honored. An institution wants your money. Are you kidding? What are you joking? I can't even make ends meet. I can't even pay the rent this month. I pay the gas bill. And you want me to go give money to tzedakah? Yeah, that's right. Yaseh tzedakah. Shekein kishahein merubim. Just like if you had in the bank $1 million. All right, this guy is being honored. I'll throw them a bone. I'll throw this institution a bone. Here's $1,000. Big deal, right? Water off a duck. I won't even know what it's missing. It's pocket change. But right now, I can't pay the rent. So I'm not giving you one penny. No. Give them the same money you would give. I don't have the same money, but give them a donation as if you have plenty of money. How do you know this? My v'chein nogoizu v'avar. So what's the drasha? Im shleimim v'chein rabim. So how does that fit into the pasuk of Koyamar Hashem im shleimim v'chein rabim? So the interpretation is shem mizaynoisav mitzum samim. If a person is in a state of shleimim, which I think the Gemara understands this to mean, he doesn't have any money. He shleim here means all of his money is directed for a purpose. Every single penny that I have is needed, is spent. Shleim is spent up. I have a salary. I make $1,000 a month. Every single dollar of that dollar is shleim. It is spent. It's complete.
Budgeted.
So therefore, I'm sorry, I can't afford to give you any money. I'm spent up. It's budgeted. It's sholem. The pasuk says to this fellow, buddy, v'chein rabim, give tzedakah as if you had more money than you need. If you only need $1,000 to survive, and you were making $2,000, then you're telling me, oh, so then you would give a donation. Even though now it's shleimim, every dollar is earmarked, it's budgeted, still give tzedakah as if v'chein rabim, you have an abundance of money, more money than you need. That's how Chazal interpret this statement. Then we go for v'chein, mai v'chein, no goizu v'ovor. What's the drasha? Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, kol ha-goizez minuchasa v'yoyzeh mehem tzedaka nitzal medina shal gehenim. Anyone that is no goizu, you share. We, until now, have translated the word no goizu mean to cut. The word no goizu is used in Tanakh to share wool off an animal. If you have income, and you take from the nikum, you share it off your money tree, and you give it to tzedakah, your nogoizu, ovar, you will pass through a road that does not take you to Gehenim. Instead of going to Gehenim, the ovar, the driver, after the person leaves this world, Chazal say, Malachim come to get his neshama and to bring him somewhere. So when they're driving in the highway in Shemayim, there's a big sign that says, Gehenim. Stay left. The GPS says, keep to your left until you reach your destination. Okay? So the driver, the Uber driver, Ovor, he's not going to follow directions. He's going to pass to the other road. Over. Why? Why? Because nogoizu, you shared your wool. In other words, you've given money to tzedakah, you've taken money off the money tree, off your money animal, and you've given it to tzedakah in that merit of our. The Uber driver will not go down the road that leads to Gehenim, he will pass, he'll take you to Gan Eden. Im roy adam was gefolgt wir haben matan wir schon kol geiz mit khas weiß im stocker nit soll mi dine shal gehenem marshal le steir khelais famous marshal two sheep that are in the pen. One of them is thick, you have not given it a haircut, okay, in a year, so it's very very it's massive, and the other one you've taken off its wool, and now they have to pass through a narrow straight that's full of thorns. The animal that has not had a haircut in a year, when it goes through the narrow straight that's full of thorns, it's going to get stuck. The one that has been cut down, sheared, when it goes through the narrow straight, goes through with no, it's over. It passes through this area with no harm, no complications, doesn't get stuck. That closed area is din, is mishpat, is judgment. Everyone has to pass through the narrow gate. The narrow gate is where it's scrutinized, where there's din. If a person is full, he has not given money to tzedakah, he gets stuck there. He's scrutinized. But a person that has given, he comes light, he travels lightly, comes to the next world, everything you've given away was money to tzedakah, then he's able to get through this area with no problem whatsoever. Achas gezuza, here's water. V'achas eino gezuza, one has not been shorn. Gezuza ovra, v'she'eino gezuza lo yavra. So this thing will be a little different. There's another marshal, but the same idea. The water, he's waterlogged. It absorbs, the wool absorbs all the water and it's stuck. Period. Now we go to the last part of the pasuk. V'ini sich omem arzutro afilu oni hamispanis minat staka yaset staka. Even a person who is in a matzav of ini sich is destitute. Even he should give a few dollars to staka. Loi anechoit. If a person does all of this, Loi Tanya Rabbi Yosef Shuv Ein Marin Loi Simani Anius. Hashem will not show him signs of poverty. It doesn't say Anius. It's very interesting. There's something called Simani Anius. There are many different categories of being poor. There's an Oni, there's an Evyoin, there is a Dal, a Rosh, and then there's a new principle called Simani Anius. It's a new category. A Nayadin, a new category. Simone Anios. I'm not exactly sure where on the spectrum this category fits in this long list of very unpleasant words. Oni, Evyoin, Rosh, Dal. And here we have this term called Simone Anios. Chazal say a person, even if you give the tzedakah, a person will not be, Loi Anech, Oid Hashem will not show this person this principle, this pain of the simone anios, ein oni ela bedas. It's interesting, there are a lot of poor people out there. And what makes one person different than the other is attitude. Person lets it get to him, it holds him back. A person that does not let his financial matzav bother him, then, you know, he has an open mind. You can accomplish very, very great things. It's very, very, very fascinating how much a person's financial matzav weighs down on his ability to be creative, to be productive in society. So what is the point of this? What is the point of this? We have over here so we review the Medrash. The Medrash over here says, "I'm shleimim." The pasuk is discussing giving tzedakah. If a person is shleimim, all of his money is, Mr. Miller said, the best word is budgeted. Every single penny is shleim. In this context, to be creative, it's earmarked for a purpose. It's budgeted. There's nothing left to give tzedakah. Hashem says, "Sorry, buddy, you figure out." Figure out what to do. Whatever, you figure it out. You figure out where you're going to get the money to give tzedakah. Don't give me excuses of shleimim. Figure it out. Give tzedakah v'chein. V'chein here means give the money. Give money. As if rabbim. As if you're the biggest gevir in the world. Not in the world, but responsible. You have to be responsible, of course. V'chein rabbim. It's true in Lakewood, they say that the collectors, they say, it's very, very fascinating. Lakewood, they are some of the poorest people in the world, of Jewish, some of the poorest people that literally don't have anything. It's not a joke. You only hear about the, you know, you only hear in the news about these, you get the impression everyone is a billionaire. Only the Yechidim are rich. The Hamoinam is very, very poor. And yet the collectors tell you that in Lakewood, they get the most money. They go to Lakewood, the expression, blind, leading the blind, the poor are feeding the poor. The collectors who have literally don't have what to eat, they come to America, they mevaza themselves. We're not discussing how this happened. Okay, let's not go there. The matzav is pathetic. And they come to Flatbush, they get money. They claim when they go to Lakewood, where they have even people there are a lot poorer than they are in Flatbush, they get more money than they get in Flatbush. Unbelievable. Why? I don't know why. Obviously, there's more of a feeling of this pasuk. Im shleimim, even though you have nothing, all your money is budgeted, v'chein rabim, you have a mitzvah still to give tzedakah as if you had more than you needed. And if you'll v'chein, if you'll do so, v'chein no goizu, if a person will do so, he will take away some of his hard-earned money and separate it and give it to tzedakah, v'ovor. Then when it will come a difficult time in his life, where he has to pass through an area where he would get waterlogged, he would get bogged down, he'll be able to pass very easily. It'll be a kapara, it'll be a schus. And then it goes so far to the inisich. Guess what? Even if a person finds himself in a matzav of being destitute, the lowest of the low, even then, give a dollar. Do something. And if you'll do something, Hashem will reciprocate. Loi a'aneich oid. I, Hashem, will not allow you to see, to experience the simone anios anymore. You'll get a job. Somehow, you'll have siyata d'shmai to find some way to sustain yourself, to find the parnasa, not to suffer. And this is a very, very beautiful drush. Now we can appreciate the beginning of Rashi. Rashi starts off with this very unusual expression. I'm going to tell you a pshat, and the pshat that I'm telling you is yofeh, is beautiful. Rashi is saying this in contrast to the Medrash that we just said and the parish of the Mitzudois David. Sach HaKol, we learned today three translations for this pasuk. We learned the parish, the second parish of Rashi, which was exactly what the Mitzudois David said yesterday. Even if the nation of Ashur are shleimim, meaning they're mighty, they have weapons of mass destruction, they are bravo, powerful, they're armed, they're successful. Shleimim means they're successful people. V'chein rabim, they're numerous. Big deal. Means nothing. V'chein, nevertheless, Hashem says, I'm going to cut you down. V'chein no goizu, I'm going to obliterate you. V'ovar, you're going to cease to exist from this world like you never existed. To the point, I'm going to do it with such intensity, v'inisich, I'm going to torture you to the degree you'll never stand to fight another day. Loy a'anechot, it won't be necessary to ever go and obliterate you a second time. That was the Perush of the Mitzudos, that was Rashi's second interpretation. And then there is the Medrash. The Medrash says, Ashur. Who's talking about the nation of Ashur? We're talking about 21st century. A stomach guy who doesn't have what to eat. A poor man, a person who struggles to make a few dollars. Shlame him, all your money's budgeted. Doesn't matter. Give stock of a chain. Give a few dollars to tztaka as if v'chein rabim. V'chein ogoyzu. If you'll give money, you'll share off some of your hard-earned money. V'ovar, it'll save you in the future from a lot of problems. V'inisich, if you're very, very poor, give money also. It'll be a zuchus that you will not be poor ever again. Rashi, in this first parish, says, it's all very, very nice. But let me tell you a very beautiful parish on this pasuk. Yofeh. Yofeh in Rashi's vocabulary means my translation, or really the Targum, the translation fits the words. It's not forced. You're not manipulating the translation. And that is, im shalemim, yeshalem be'etza achas, to do evil. All of the nation, they have one common goal. Their goal and their plan is to destroy Klal Yisrael. V'chein rabim, they have more soldiers than they can possibly need. And v'chein nogoizu, they cut through the chidekel on their journey to reach Yerushalayim, v'ovar, and then they come to the pros, the Euphrates, and they cross through the Euphrates, and they arrive at the front door of Yerushalayim. Hashem says, ha ha ha, yippee-doo, you arrived here, and all of your bravo and macho, good for you. I'll obliterate you to the point that it won't be necessary for me to ever lift up a finger to you again. You'll cease to exist. Rashi says, this pshat is yofeh. It's yofeh. Yeah. The translation fits the words. Notice, Rashi did not say that the Medrash doesn't have a brain in his head. And the Mitzudois never saw the day of light. He doesn't go and insult the Medrash and the first parish. The way Rashi says that this pshat is yofeh. Rashi, positive reinforcement. Instead of knocking someone by saying this is wrong and this is no good and this, you look at some of the Mefarshim on the page. They do it all the time. A lot of the Mefarshim on the page, they say, yeah, the Ibn Ezra said this. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Let me tell you the Emes of Pshat. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. The Ramban, Rashi, there are three Mahalchim in the Pasuk. There's the Medrash. There is Mitzudas David. Doesn't say because Mitzudas David lived 500 years later, obviously. But there's the other Mahalich. And then there's the Targum Yonason. Yofeh. Targum Yonason is Yofeh. That's why Rashi is Rabban Shel Yisrael. Okay? That's why we don't say about the Ravid, he's the Rabban Shel Yisrael. Because Rashi knows how to explain what's good with this beautiful term, Yofeh Targum Shel Yoinason. It's Miyushev Al Lashon HaMikra. And he goes on to explain that first pshat. Three Mahalchim with a lesson in their cheretz of how to teach. Okay, we'll stop here.
Sometimes Rashi.
This has nothing to do with
No, nothing.